This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. From military strikes on terrorists to delivery-based companies like Amazon to little kids playing outside, growing numbers of Americans want to use drones for a diverse set of reasons. But these unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs as they're called, are also increasingly the target of state legislatures. Lawmakers have lots of concerns. Basic safety, for one, from interference with aircraft to drones hitting and injuring someone. Privacy is also a huge worry, the fear that unwanted pictures will be taken or that stalkers could use these to track their victims. Property rights also come into play. What if a drone bangs into your car or is repeatedly buzzing around your backyard? And finally, some lawmakers want assurances that police won't overuse UAVs as surveillance tools. About half the states now have laws attempting to regulate drones, and others are considering legislation, including here in New Hampshire. But meanwhile, the federal government is preparing its own rules, which would likely override anything the states are doing right now. Today in the Exchange, dealing with drones. Let's hear from you. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange@nhpr.org, find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests for the hour. Dave Brooks is here in studio, reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger at graniteGeek.org. You can read some of Dave's columns on drones on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And Dave Brooks, good to see you. Welcome back.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Joining us by phone from D.C. is Bart Jansen. He's a reporter for USA Today. He covers transportation, including the Federal Aviation Administration and Congress. And you can read some of Bart's coverage at our website as well, nhpr.org/exchange. And Bart, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, and a little bit later, guys, we will hear from people involved in the policymaking around this in New Hampshire and from someone involved in the drone business. But Dave Brooks, just to start with you, super, super basic, what is a drone?
All right. Well, when we first talked about this a couple of years ago, I guess, actually, of course, drones are mostly the military devices over in Iraq and Afghanistan. They were like little airplanes, fixed-wing aircraft that went and did military stuff. But of course, as everybody knows probably who's listening, since then the quadricopter has taken over, which is a design that's really proved to be the cheapest and most reliable, which is a machine that has four little helicopter propellers, one at each corner. And that allows it to do anything that any other kind of flying vehicle could do. Pitch, yaw, roll, and the like. That has made quite a difference, but just as important has been the improvements in software and control systems, so that nowadays you can spend just a few $100 and get a machine that you pull it out of the box and you hook it up and you do a little download of firmware and it's flying.
So unmanned aerial vehicle, and basically you can use it to just check things out, go places where you might not be able to go.
Absolutely, and they're everywhere, of course. You can buy them at Walmart and practically in the grocery store anymore. there are well over 400,000 have been registered at the by the FAA, 410,000, but it's probably a bigger number than that. And there's at least that many out there that aren't registered, I'm sure.
Well, and Dave, we hear that the number of drones purchased in recent years has skyrocketed. I was just looking at some of the numbers yesterday. Who's using them and what for?
So there's probably, well, most people are using them just for fun, all right? Most of them are sold with cameras on them, and that's really been the major use for them, is a either a video or a still camera on a gimbal so it can swivel around or just even fix to it. It's incredible what they've they've been able to do. And you can see this on YouTube anytime, all these wonderful aerial shots that it used to be you had to hire a helicopter to get. Now anybody can do it in their backyard. There is software now in which they will actually can follow you, so you can film yourself skiing down the hill. That's still a little iffy, but it's not far away. And you can, you know, have them that can film your neighbor as you indicated. But cameras is by far the biggest use of them, and many of them can let you see what the drone is seeing through your smartphone as they're flying around. So,
Bart, how about you? What about nationally? Who's using these, and in what ways? What are you hearing?
Well, there's a big distinction nationally between, I guess, what we call hobbyists, which is mostly what he's been talking about, saying that just people buying them in the store, you take it out and play with it. You're supposed to stay lower than 400 feet, fly during the day, and keep the aircraft within sight, you know, as safety precautions. But then, more importantly, at the federal level is this question about commercial use of drones, because many, many businesses want to use them, like you said, for aerial photography, just to film, you know, stuff going on, such as skiers. What one of the applications just approved was to film people skiing out in western ski slopes, but also for inspections, pipeline inspections, overhead electrical wire inspections, and agricultural research to see how crops are going, where more fertilizer might be used, so that it's often referred to as the dirty or dangerous jobs that could be done more cheaply and more safely by using this remote control device rather than having somebody like climb a ladder to get up to an electrical line or crawl across a pipeline for miles and miles to inspect a pipeline. So it's they're useful functions that is this commercial realm, and this is the one where federal regulations are applied. And so far, there have been coming up on 5,000 permits granted to different businesses to use them in a commercial way somehow.
Okay, so some businesses, Bart, are being allowed to use them now, even though the commercial area is a little more tricky?
Yes. In February of 2012, Congress said, FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, you must figure out a way for drones to share the skies with passenger planes by September of 2015. You may notice, you know, between daylight savings time and everything else that changes clocks, we haven't got rules yet for commercial drones. They are still working on them. It's difficult at the federal level. The first set of rules for drones weighing up to commercial drones weighing up to 55 pounds is expected to be completed in June. So that'll be the rules for most of what you see. These, as he says, smaller ones, they tend to be quadricopters, but they can also be fixed wing, look more like planes. There'll be a set of rules for all those folks. In the meantime, while we've been waiting for that rule to be finished, the FAA has granted case by case these special exemptions to say, okay, I've got a business in a city, and they want to do aerial photography. They want to fly around buildings and film them for a real estate agent. Well, all right, so long as you fly them, you know, lower than 500 feet during daylight hours, keep the aircraft within sight of the pilot, they have been granting those approvals for a couple of years now, and they've granted 4,680 of those permits so far. But they want to get away from that case-by-case approval and just have broad general rules so that everybody sort of knows the rules of the road.
Right, because that's a lot of work, case-by-case. There's a lot of commercial applications that I can see just listening to the two of you. So I can imagine that it's easier to have a broad set of rules. But Dave Brooks, go ahead, jump in there.
And a lot of other countries around the world are actually ahead or behind, I guess, depending on how you think about it, this and allowing drones to do kind of whatever they want. Just poking around, you can find that New Zealand, for example, has just approved them for their national fire service. So it's obviously hard to keep a track on what fires are happening in the wildfire. And I even found a farmer in Australia who uses them not just to keep an eye on his, you know, their enormous ranches there, but actually to muster his cattle. So he sort of scares the cattle into the into the yard using them. So they are in use all around the place. Singapore is using them already. In China, there is a city where they are doing a drone delivery system. And my favorite idea that I've heard of is Amazon has filed a patent application to put up rooftop solar panels using drones, which would require a different kind of solar panel, but is a really interesting idea.
Well, and we were interested to read this morning that some people are talking about Starbucks delivering coffee by drone, which, you know, I know would be interesting for some folks.
An endless supply coming up to the NHPR studios.
Well, lots of applications, but also, as you gentlemen have been hinting, lots of concerns about privacy and safety, and states have been getting into the game with the lack of federal regulations at this point. Joining us now for more on that is State Representative Neil Kirk. He's a Republican from Ware. He has sponsored a bill regulating drones here in the Granite State. And Representative Kirk, always a pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, Laura. Good morning.
What are your main concerns with drones, Representative Kirk?
My main concern is to make sure that we allow all of the wonderful opportunities and creative uses that your other guests were talking about to continue and expand, because I think it's possible that drones will have as much of an impact on our society, well, almost as much of an impact on our society as the Internet has. That said, there are many needs to look at the limitations we'd like to place on drones so that they don't become something that is unacceptable to us in our personal lives. For example, can drones buzz our property? Can the neighboring boy use his drone to take pictures of my teenage daughter sunbathing in our hedged backyard because he can't see through the hedge? What are people going to do about following with a drone other people as they go about their daily business? Are we going to have businesses that make it their business to surveil, pardon the use of that word, surveil others and follow where they go? Do private property owners have any interests that need to be protected from drones? In other words, for all of the extraordinary benefits, social and economic benefits from the technology, we need to balance that with protecting public and private privacy interests.
Well, I read this morning a commentator who said privacy rights are way behind where the technology is, and I'm guessing that's how you feel, Representative Kirk.
Well said, Laura.
Well, so how does this bill try to strengthen those privacy rights and property rights that you're talking about, Representative Kirk?
First, it's divided into two parts. One affects government, the state government, and the other protects businesses and individuals. With respect to the government, we say that government can't use a drone, law enforcement can't use a drone for law enforcement purposes or to track people without a warrant. But government, just like any private sector business, is free to use the drones to surveil photograph our forests or our wildlife or whatever they want to do with that, because those would not actually adversely affect people. Government cannot fly a drone under this bill below 250 feet. Government cannot take photographs of identifiable people on private property when they're doing their flybys. So what we try to do is to protect privacy interests of individuals from government using their drones in the ordinary course, appropriate course of government business. With respect to the private sector, the same kinds of rules apply, not warrants, but you can't fly below 250 feet and buzz someone's home or business. You can't take pictures of the inside of their homes using a drone. You can't take pictures of identifiable people on their in a home or private property without their consent. Now, obviously, if you take a picture of a person inadvertently, you can blur it out, so it's not an issue. But we don't want drones being used to take, or at least I don't feel the state wants drones to be used to take pictures of us going about our private business. You can't use a drone for stalking. You can't fly a drone within 1,000 feet of critical infrastructure, such as a prison or a petroleum refinery. I'm sure most folks have heard about drones being used to make drops of heroin and other drugs in state prisons and so forth. Well, we've had at least 3 flyovers by drones in the New Hampshire state prison, probably more. We need to make sure that doesn't happen, and the prison folks are very concerned about that.
Yeah, it's a distraction when they see these drones overhead.
It is, and who knows what files. I mean, we used to put files in cakes. Now we're flying in files by drones. But it's the drugs that are the issue there. So the idea is to have minimal protections that you and I would expect for our privacy, while at the same time having as few restrictions as possible on businesses that want to use drones for real estate, for surveying, for all of the other uses, package delivery, pizza. Amazon wants to do this.
And you're okay with that, Representative Kirk? Pizza's being delivered?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I haven't ordered one yet. I understand it's Papa John's or someone like that is doing it in Britain.
Yeah, and they would have to drop below 250 feet
yes, but that would
to make
be
the delivery.
Right, yeah. But that would be clearly in two ways. Number one, it would be over public roads, so there's no limitation on heights flying over public property. And number two, since I ordered it, presumably I gave consent for them to deliver it by drone and have the drone come on my property.
What about the federal government, Representative Kirk? As you know, the Federal Aviation Administration, Congress, are looking at federal rules, so we won't have this weird patchwork of state-by-state rules. But as you also know, the FAA hasn't gotten around to doing what it was supposed to do by last fall yet. So I wonder how you think your efforts fit into federal efforts.
You're talking about the dreaded Section 2142 in the Federal Aviation Reauthorization Act. That basically preempts the area of drone regulation to the federal government. I think it's overreach. Amazon and other national players want to, as they usually do, and this is true for insurance companies and all businesses, have a single uniform set of rules because it's easier for them to do business. And I understand that. And certainly the FAA has that and should have that with respect to safety. But when it comes to balancing privacy interests and having local regulation of heights, I know that the FAA claims jurisdiction from the ground up over the air, but they really can't, I think, know well what makes sense for the state of New Hampshire versus the state of Alaska versus the state of Texas and the city of Chicago. There has to be some local input to this, and I hope that Congress will, at least I think it's passed the Senate, but I would hope the House would deal with this. Certainly, the National Conference of State Legislatures, which represents most state legislatures, is taking an active role in trying to fight this so that we retain what in New Hampshire we call local control or state interest. The other thing, of course, is that if this bill were to pass and the federal legislation were to pass also, to some extent, the federal legislation would preempt some but not all parts of this bill. The other thing, of course, is that sometimes when the feds preempt legislation, they say anything in effect prior to preemption stays in effect. So there's some benefit to New Hampshire in getting its act together and passing a bill prior to the time the Reauthorization Act becomes effective.
And Representative Kirk, last question for you, please. You talked about, you know, making sure that people's privacy rights are respected, that your backyard isn't buzzed, for example. But what if it is buzzed? What if I feel like I am being followed or surveilled or stalked by a drone? How do I even begin to redress that?
That's a very practical problem. The bill that I've sponsored requires every drone owner to write his name and address on the drone in case it crashes, where you'd have an opportunity to pick it up and do whatever you wanted to do with the owner. But if it's just a flyby, it's a real problem. It happens now with helicopters. You really don't know if your privacy rights have been violated. But remember, Laura, that in America, for the most part, 90 to 95% of the people obey the rules. And so we're setting a standard of conduct for the very vast majority of Americans. There will be some who abuse it, but that's no reason not to make sure that the standards of behavior that we think are appropriate are followed by the 95% of the law-abiding folk.
All right. Representative Kirk, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye now.
That's Republican Representative Neil Kirk from Ware. Again, he has sponsored a bill on regulating drones. Coming up, we'll look at efforts in other states to also put some regulations on drones. And we'll talk with someone who runs a drone consulting business about some of the benefits and drawbacks that he sees. All that plus your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, dealing with drones. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. Find us on Twitter or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Joining us in studio, Dave Brooks, reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger at graniteGeek.org. He's been doing a lot of reporting on drones and their use. Also joining us from D.C., Bart Jansen, reporter for USA Today, covering transportation, including the Federal Aviation Administration and Congress. And Bart, we just heard from Representative Neil Kirk, again, sponsoring a bill trying to balance expansion of drone use, but in a way that respects property and privacy rights. I wonder how much his efforts are reflected around the country, Bart.
Well, there were a number of elements in his bill that have been dealt with individually in different states. He's raised a lot of very common concerns. One that's been common, well, just to give you an idea of the scope of this, that National Conference of State Legislatures, the group that he referenced saying that they want to continue to allow these state-level laws, they say that so far this year, 26 states have enacted legislation already, and there are hundreds of bills being debated in legislatures around the country. So one of the things that they cover is warrants. They say, well, you ought not to use a drone to surveil somebody unless you have a warrant, just like regular police would have to do, you know, following you outside of a building. But a North Dakota lawmaker proposed a bill like that, and he actually got it passed into law in last year. But on the way to passage, they added a provision that said, well, you also should not have lethal weapons added to that drone. Well, all right, that makes sense to people. They approved the law, it becomes law. But then people said, well, but then does that mean that law enforcement can mount non-lethal weapons, such as rubber bullets or tasers? And so that's still a fuss in North Dakota, and they're going to address it again in 2017. Likewise, privacy issues, trying to limit heights or prohibit drones from flying over private property without consent. Those are issues that have been debated in legislatures across the country, and they've been approved in several places. But as he correctly noted, there is legislation pending in the U.S. Senate this week. They are debating FAA legislation this week that has a provision that says no state or political subdivision will enact any law, regulation, or provision relating to the design, manufacture, testing, licensing, registration, certification, operation, or maintenance of unmanned aircraft systems, including airspace, altitude, flight paths, equipment, technology, operations, pilot, and operations, and certification. So the federal legislation, if it is approved at the federal level, could potentially wipe out these state-level bills, and that has lawmakers across the country very concerned.
Wow, Bart. So it sounds like Congress, even in an era when, you know, Congress likes to give a lot of power to the states and let the states manage things as they see fit for their own state, sounds like when it comes to drones, Congress is saying, uh-uh.
Well, there's this idea that the FAA governs everything in the air. And up to this point, they've had a general law. It's called U.S. Code Chapter 49, Section 40103. It just says the U.S. government has exclusive sovereignty of airspace of the United States. Now, that sounds pretty, you know, pretty substantive, but because of confusion, because of local interests dealing with that, that is already in place, and you still have these local laws come up because what the local officials are saying is, we're not going to deal with safety. You know, we'll let FAA deal with safety, you know, how these aircraft fly, whether they get too close to an airport, that sort of thing, that they fly only during the day usually. But in terms of questions more like zoning or even gun control, that those are local issues that have historically been handled by the states, and even if there is this patchwork of state-level laws, that it would be no more confusing than driver's license laws. Hey, you have to follow the speed limit in different states. You have to find out what the local rules are, and drivers, motorists, are just expected to do that. The local argument is that, hey, you'd have to do the same thing with drones. Find out what the local rules are.
Well, and Dave Brooks, a question for you that came up in our conversation with Neil Kirk. You know, so we can lay out all these rules and regulations, and you can't do this and you can't do that, and you can't impinge on someone's property rights or privacy rights. But what if there's a drone that kind of buzzes by my backyard, you know, 2-3 days a week? I have no idea where it's coming from or what it's doing, but I start to feel like it's spying on me. What do I do? Can I shoot it down? I mean, I can't read the registration number, you know, as it flies by my house.
Well, this is a much more fun topic than legislation, of course, because then you get into...
I mean, what rights do I have?
Funky technology.
You know, I don't know if it's troublesome or not.
And that is unclear. But what can you do practically about a zone, about a drone flying by, is still up in the air. There is a company that is developing a net gun that you can fire a net, and in theory it will, wrap around the drone, which would bring it crashing to the ground, and then you can read the person's name and call them up.
If it's registered.
Of course, they're all registered. Everybody always follows the rules.
Yeah.
Don't you know that?
Even the 10-year-old who got a drone for Christmas. Sure, go ahead.
And there is at least one place I've seen online where they are training eagles to go grab small drones out of the air, which would be... awesome, of course.
So I could get a trained eagle.
You get a trained eagle.
Like
you go down and rent a raptor. But how legal this is. So there is at least one court case I know of, and actually maybe Bart knows more about it, where a guy shot down a drone that was over his yard, and he was taken to court by the drone owner for damaging it. And I'm not quite sure what has happened with that or what the legal status is.
So both people probably felt like they were within their rights. The guy felt like he was being bothered, but the other guy said, no, my drone wasn't bothering you. By the way, you broke my $700 drone.
Exactly. Precisely. And it's not at all clear. Like, you know, many times when new technology comes along, the law is way behind and social mores are way behind. And the technology is changing so fast that it's very hard for us to catch up.
But, well, with us now on the phone from Nashua is somebody who might be able to answer that question, Dave Brooks. Brent Foreman is on the line. He's owner of Aerial Advantages, a drone consulting business in Nashua. And, Brent, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Brent, how would you advise someone who wanted to use a drone but didn't want it to get, you know, shot down by an angry homeowner? How would you advise someone to do this in a safe way?
You start by not flying over other people's property. You know, the FAA guidance for commercial operations especially say, you know, only over property where you have permission. And as a homeowner or a hobbyist, you should be doing the same thing. Be respectful of others' places and not misuse the technology.
So if you're going to use a drone, you need to, as Representative Kirk told us, fly down, you know, the main roads of your town before you get to your destination. Is that correct,
Brent? Fly down? I'd say drive down and get a good survey on the ground before you put anything in the air.
I meant send the drone down highways or roadways instead of, you know what I'm talking about there, Brent.
Yeah, follow, you know, transportation routes, not go over private property to get where you got to go.
Right. So who is buying drones these days, Brent, and for what purpose?
I see a lot of different applications. Most of them are being bought for photography and mapping applications, some industrial use, construction companies are using it to track their progress and give progress reports to their investors when they're clearing land and doing big developments. Some of the newer technology on the drones is really cool. You can go out and do some very technical mapping of areas. You can even estimate, you know, volume of material when there's heavy excavation being done. You can go figure out how much material's been moved from a place, how much is there to be moved and to be used, and it helps with a lot of aspects in that respect.
Well, how big a jump have you seen, Brent, in the number of people who want drones?
Oh, it's huge. It's a buzzword everywhere you go. So everyone is very interested in them. There's a lot of cheap ones out there, and not cheap, but, you know, lower cost. And then you get into some of the higher end ones, and, you know, they're all hitting price points where an average consumer can go pick one up now, and people can play with them and figure out what they can do.
What kind of consulting do people need, Brent, when it comes to drones? Again, your company, Aerial Advantages, is a drone consulting business.
Yes, absolutely. So people come in with all types of conceptions about what they could possibly do with a drone. And we try to help them keep it grounded to what's realistic, you know. So out of the box, there's quite a few units that'll do great mapping, great picture work, and they're easy to fly. And, you know, they're just fantastic pieces of technology. Then there's higher-end usage, like mapping large areas and some of the construction survey work I was mentioning. And those tend to be, you know, custom-made units. And custom-made is a, you know, a rough term, too, because it's more integrating pieces from different manufacturers to put together a solution for someone.
So is it...
And then they usually need training and some understanding of the data they can get and the bounds of where they can fly.
So you're giving them both technical advice, Brent, but also some policy advice?
Yeah. I wouldn't say policy directly, but general good habits, you know, good ideas to do. You know, keep it on your own property, keep it low, don't go flying out of control, keep it in good weather conditions, stuff to you know, common sense type stuff that isn't always common sense to everyone to make sure that they stay safe with these things, appreciate what they're capable of in good ways, and appreciate that they are, you know, a big flying rock at the end of the day. Everything that comes up does come down. So you want to make sure no one's under you. You want to make sure you're not over personal property and stuff like that.
You don't want to break somebody's windows. I think Dave Brooks, reporter with the Concord Monitor, blogger at Granite Geek, wants to jump in. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, how's it going? So a lot of these people years ago might have wanted to fly radio-controlled airplanes, but they didn't because those were much more complicated. Do you find part of the issue here is that these are so simple to fly that people don't prepare before they get going?
Yes, quite a bit, definitely. One of the things I do, I represent DJI products, and part of the reason they let me come on board, I'm kind of a small player in that world. For my business, but they brought me on because I do spend time with my customers to try to educate them on, you know, the safety aspects and the responsible aspects of how to use these things before you go out and pull up next to a mall or pull up next to a stadium or pull up next to, you know, an airport and try to fly this thing because you want to get cloud pictures from 10,000 feet. You know, that's not responsible use of these. And I try to give people, you know, a good overview so that they use these safely and responsibly.
Yeah. And are you involved with drone racing, speaking of cool things?
Yeah, a little bit. I've hosted some events, some indoor events. We tried to set up a series getting going in Nashua last year. We didn't have a lot of turnout, but we're still playing with it hobby-wise. There's a number of AMA flight fields around the area. I've made friends with all the pilots now, and we go out and fly and have some fun with it.
And last question for you, Brent. We talked earlier with Representative Neil Kirk, and coming up, we're going to talk to another state representative. As you know, states around the country are looking at legislating privacy, safety, property rights, and so forth. How would you advise state lawmakers as they look to make sure that these are used, as you put it, in a responsible way?
That's a tough question. I'm not sure that the state has a lot of... you know, a lot of pull there. They can say stuff, but people come in and buy drones all the time, and they're not well versed in going and researching laws. That's why I try to give them a good overview. And so I'm not sure how effective it'll be at the end of the day.
People won't pay attention to what the rules are?
Quite possibly. And not for malintent purposes, but more ignorance.
Sure, because these are so widely available and so much fun for people to play with.
Yeah.
Well, Brent, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Brent Foreman again, owner of Aerial Advantages, a drone consulting business based in Nashua. Let's hear from you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. With ever-increasing use of drones by hobbyists and businesses, we're looking at how they're being used and some state efforts to restrict drones. Join us with your comments, questions, concerns, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Bart Jansen, what do you think about that last comment by Brent there? You know, states can try to do what they want, but most people aren't going to pay attention, not because they're malicious, but just because You can buy drones at Walmart, and they're fun to play with.
Yes, that's been a concern at the federal level, and actually another provision in the Senate FAA bill, the Senate version of the FAA bill being debated this week, would begin to require an online test of drone owner operators as they buy the thing and as they register it. The 2012 law that the FAA has been developing, the rules for commercial drones, said explicitly you should not regulate the hobbyists, the recreational users. And as Dave mentioned earlier, more than 400,000 of these recreational or hobbyist operators have registered, and they, each one, could have more than one drone. So there could be a ton of drones out there. There are groups, as Brent mentioned, there are these AMA fields. I think he was referring to the Academy of Model Aeronautics. They represent 180,000 hobbyists nationwide, and they try to educate their members about the rules. As he said, you know, stay away from folks that aren't associated with the flight. Fly during the day. Fly it during good weather. Keep an eye on it. So that's all well and good, but the question is, if you're just somebody who showed up at Walmart, you got the latest new drone, you think you can fly it, it looks so easy a child could do it, and you might not know all the rules, then in addition, if states approve different laws that maybe make the rules even stricter than what you've heard of at the federal level, then there's that question about how people educate themselves about that.
So play with the new toy first, Bart, and read the protocols later.
Well, you're not supposed to. Even right now, the FAA approved or created this federal registry to get the name and physical address of every drone operator starting just before Christmas, because they were worried about so many of these, or the holiday season, because they were worried about so many of these being given as gifts. And so those 400,000 people have all registered since December 21st. And as more are sold, even more will show up, and they are supposed to register before they take their first flight. What could happen under the Senate version of the FAA legislation is, in addition to the registering, so that you know who the folks are, you would have a number on the aircraft so that if it did crash, that you could track it back to whoever was flying irresponsibly. But in addition to the registration, that they operators might have to pass a short online test to say, you know, how high can you go? How fast can you go? You know,
so like a driver's license.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, you are sort of operating a small plane. Go ahead, Dave Brooks.
I absolutely agree.
A tiny.
You are absolutely operating a tiny plane. I got my pilot's license years and years ago, and you know, I spent ages in order to get my license. But of course, that's because I would have died if I'd done it wrong. But I think any hope that people are going to actually pay attention to this is slim. To me, the thing you look at is firmware, which is sort of a type of software. So when you buy your drone, it might have been sitting on the shelf for 6 months before you bought it. And you know, over that six-month period, the company that makes it might have sent out a new type of software that will improve it. And so in theory, before you operate it, you should first go online and get any firmware updates. And in order to make it operate better. And people don't even do that. They go out, and so the thing will crash or operate badly because it doesn't have the firmware update. And if they're not even going to do that, the chances of them going and, you know, going through a little online test and learning about, you know, aerial regulations is, I think, pretty slim.
Our phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. More of your comments and questions about drones, 1-800-892-6477. Back in a minute. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, policymakers navigate the brave new world of drones here in New Hampshire and around the country. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With ever-increasing use of drones by businesses and hobbyists and governments, we're looking at how they're being used and some efforts here in New Hampshire and in other states to make sure drones respect privacy and property rights and basic safety rules. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Dave Brooks is here, reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger at graniteGeek.org. Also, Bart Jansen with USA Today, covering transportation, including the Federal Aviation Administration and Congress. And Dave and Bart, let's go back to our listeners. And John joins us from Dover. Hi, John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I want to call and speak, I guess, on the hobbyist side of the equation, let's say. I'm a former president of a local AMA club, and you know, just want to say that the AMA is a tremendous resource for anybody that wants to get into drones. You can go right on to modelaircraft.org, put your zip code in, and it'll spit out all the nearest clubs. And it's just a great way to talk to people who are into it already, who know some of the ins and outs of it, you know, can guide you so you're not spending like $1,200 on a, you know, drone that you have no idea how to use and could really get yourself into trouble with.
AMA is American Model Aircraft. I'm taking a guess there. Yeah.
Yeah. Their Association of Model Aircraft.
Association of Model Aircraft. Yeah. Okay. So, John, do you have a drone or two or three?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I fly... I have a couple of scale airplanes, and I have a few multi-rotors or quadcopters.
And what do you do with them?
Mostly I fly them first-person view, where you have a camera on there that has a video transmitter that goes down to a set of goggles that I'm wearing. So it's like you're sitting right in the front of the drone. And I really just enjoy kind of either racing or flying low to the ground around trees, stuff like that at our local field up in Rochester.
So what are you looking for when you sort of are flying around? Is it just to feel like you're flying or?
Exactly. That's what I get out of it. I would, you know, I'd love to get a real pilot's license and have a real airplane and stuff. But even if I did, you can't fly it, you know, 3 feet off the ground in between trees and stuff and not worry about it. You know, you can with these little racing drones, you can absolutely do that. And the worst you do is break a propeller, you pick it up and keep on going.
And one last question for you, John. I'm so glad you called because it's interesting to hear somebody who's using this just for fun and recreation. What do you think about efforts at the State House to make sure drone users respect privacy rights, property rights, basic safety rules of the road?
Well, the property rights and the safety rights, you know, absolutely. You know, you got to be safe when you're doing it. If you're doing the kind of flying that I was just talking about, like what we in the community might call proximity flying, which is low to the ground, you really should do it at an AMA field where you're not going to be in any kind of danger of striking somebody or striking property. As far as privacy rights go, I guess the technology is going to get there soon. But as of right now, it's pretty hard to, at least when I'm flying with the goggles on and stuff, I cannot make out, you know, really good detail. I can see people on the ground. I can see trees. I can see buildings. But I couldn't tell you a license plate number or things like that. So I don't know that. I think the privacy right part of it is a little overblown myself. But I can certainly see why people do get freaked out by it.
Well, John, I'm really glad you called in. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. With us now is another member of the State House who has had some concerns about drones. We're talking with Republican Representative John Burt of Goffstown. And Representative Burt, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Laura, for having me on.
What are your top concerns about drones, Representative Burt, and how they might be used?
Well, in the particular bill, the biggest thing that I have a concern is the preemption that the federal government's going to take over all of the rules. They've already established that they have the right. We had a bill in criminal justice that was going to not allow anybody 150 yards, even though it's on private property, from a prison to fly, you know, within that 150 yards. Right there, I'm against that because it's taken, you know, okay, so you live next to a prison. So your grandchild can't show up and say, hey, Gramps, I want to fly my little drone here. Well, not there. You know, so private rights are being squashed. But my biggest concern that I have, Laura, is where it says here, no government shall own, use, or exercise control over a drone that is equipped with any kind of lethal or non-lethal weapon. Notwithstanding paragraph, this paragraph I just read, law enforcement is allowed to use a drone with lacrimatory, i.e., what that is tear gas.
I see.
So if they see that is a huge concern of mine.
So you're worried about abuse. Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Yes. If the police are going to use tear gas, I want an actual person standing saying, okay, you know what? This crowd needs tear gas. These are the protocols. I'm going to shoot tear gas into this crowd that's disrupting, whatever this situation is. Not some guy in a van, a dark van with, all secret in the back of the building, and then he sends in the drone. He doesn't have the actual visual to make that judgment, and that is one of the biggest concerns, is I do not want our police in New Hampshire dropping tear gas on its citizens with using drones.
The Representative Kirk's bill does require that police seek a warrant and report use of the drone to the AG's office. So that doesn't go far enough for you.
No, because what's the AG going to do with it? Do we have a right to that information? I doubt we do.
How do you think, then, Representative Burt, in a perfect world, I'm putting you in charge just for the day, how would you regulate drones?
Well, at this point, I don't think I would regulate them. I don't think they're a major issue, and I think the private sector will take care of any issues that do arise, which is, let's say, if your neighbor is over spying on your daughter sunbathing, as Representative Kirk said, private sector is going to say, okay, if you have that issue, buy this little net for $59.95, and you'll take care of the drone problem. And then the biggest thing is the feds are going to take over this. So why are we at the state level with so many other major issues concerning the state? Why are we dealing with this?
Should the federal government have jurisdiction over this?
I would probably say no, but they are having jurisdiction over it, and I have no control over that.
Okay. Representative Burt, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Take care. As John Burt, Republican representative from Goffstown, again, looking at the issue of how states should or should not regulate drones. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And Bart Jansen, Dave Brooks, back to our callers. Val's joining us from Lebanon. Hi, Val. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two downsides I'm concerned about. One would be that cameras can easily have swivels. And so, if your neighbor is flying his, or even more, your friend's neighbor is driving the plane over your house, that they would be able to look into your yard. And also the idea, if they're driving them down streets because they can't be over home, they would be distracting cars and, cause car accidents. And my sort of technology concept would be that if you use your mouse over a computer screen, you have pop-ups that say, oh, this is the library, this is where the public buildings are, or something like that, that if drones had a signature, address, name, that kind of stuff, that if you had an app with your phone or that you could look up through your phone at it, that it would show that drone belongs to, Bill Smith down the street, or, the something corporation, and you'd be able to recognize. Seems a little unrealistic to me that you could catch it with a net.
My aim isn't that good either, Val. I appreciate the call. Dave Brooks, go ahead, and then I have another question for you, Bart. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Well, her last idea is interesting. I hadn't heard of anybody saying that before, being able to look up and have an ID. But there is a push to have technology put into drones that would have exclusion zones, so they would not be able to fly near certain things. Your prison is your classic example. It would be set into the map, into the GPS that they're using, that they can't go there. So even if you on the ground were trying to make them go there, they wouldn't be allowed to. That is a technological fix. It doesn't exist, but it's a distinct possibility.
Well, and to the point that that John Burt, Republican representative from Goffstown, made, Bart Jansen, earlier, he's concerned about abuse by law enforcement. We've talked a lot about concerns over privacy rights and so forth that our caller raises. How much are you hearing this concern that Representative Burt raises, Bart, that law enforcement in some, you know, dark van, as he said, might abuse the power of these drones?
Well, there has been concern in many states that have been developing these laws to at least require police to go through the same hurdles that they have to go through for anything that they pursue on the ground, so that to require warrants for surveillance, that sort of thing. Some of the bills prohibit weaponizing the drones. As I mentioned, that North Dakota bill fell into that sort of no man's land where it banned lethal weapons, but then that was presumed to have allowed the non-lethal, and that's what your lawmaker was concerned about, the idea that they could have tear gas or something else, and he doesn't want that either. But all of that being said is still all state-level folks debating this and hashing it out on their own, and the question is, no matter what you decide, do you allow tear gas or don't you, or do you require warrants or don't you, all of those laws are going to come into conflict with the federal government sooner or later, because the FAA contends that it is the only agency overseeing sovereignty of the airspace. And if the Senate bill passes this week, well, if it becomes law in conjunction with the House, that could just say none of these laws gets to survive. But yeah, there have been many, many state laws on all these issues. I was just looking again. There are six states have passed 9 laws just this year, just in these first few months. And Idaho and Oregon. Idaho didn't want to allow drones for hunting. Again, I guess worried about the weaponization. Oregon explicitly said don't operate or don't weaponize a drone. And Wisconsin also had a prohibition against hunting. But meanwhile, Indiana said you could use a drone to photograph the area around a traffic accident. That's another thing that police would like to use, and so they've explicitly approved that. And Virginia said that no local cities could approve any drone regulations. So there again, they were allowing the higher level or the broader levels of government to set whatever the rules are going to be, rather than having a different rule in every city.
Let's see if we can take another call or two, gentlemen. Adam joins us from Concord. Hi, Adam. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am known in a community as what is a maker. I make simple electronics, either small or large. It can be anything from small Game Boy type thing made with a computer the size of a credit card or one of these quad rotor things.
So you can make them, Adam.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
Much more expensive to build, but they are much higher quality. The ones that you buy off the shelf for $70, $80 are the ones that are experiencing all these issues. If you put $2,000 into a piece of technology, you're not going to go looking in your neighbor's window.
Why not?
Because that investment, normal makers spend way too much on small electronic doodads. I mean, if you want a reflow table, that's thousands of dollars just to edit a PCB board. It's way too much.
So what's your take as someone who's deeply involved in this, and it's interesting to hear from you, what's your take on the concerns people have and how lawmakers are trying to address those concerns?
I agree with some of them. I think we should have an easy passive resistance method for around airports or prisons or other security risk issues that could easily be implemented by the producers of these small, cheap quad rotor products. It's not hard to design something into the programming as soon as you have legislation already in the book. So
okay.
We're worried about figuring out what kind of legislation we should put on the books. This is taking all of this time. It could be easily designed and thrown in.
Adam, thank you for calling in. Dave Brooks, do you want to jump in?
I just want to say one other technical sort of large-scale effort that's being made is that NASA and Stanford are working on a system whereas instead of drones using GPS signals to navigate, they would set up a central server and a communication with drones in an area to basically almost control them remotely and avoid collisions and make sure they haven't got these problems. And part of the reason they're doing that is because the FAA is thinking, well, you know, if Amazon starts delivering, everybody starts delivering things, there's going to be thousands of these drones around. It's not like you're going to have human controllers overseeing it. So they want to set up some kind of a centralized computer system, or at least commercial drones could be hooked into it. And that's one of the higher-level ways that technology is going to try and solve all these problems that are showing up. But
Well, that would open up a whole nother box of
that
problems, though.
Indeed.
People
that
feeling like they don't want some larger entity controlling how they play with their drones.
Until a drone crashes into their living room window, then maybe they change their mind.
Well, and last question for you, Bart. You have mentioned several times this Senate bill, which seems to give the Federal Aviation Administration broad powers over all drone regulation around the country. What's the status of that bill? I mean, you said it's in the Senate. Is there a full vote coming up, and which way do you think it's going to go?
Well, it is already a provision in the Senate bill. The Senate bill, they're expected to complete work on it this week. They're trying to get onto appropriations bills before summer. And so it probably the bill appears likely to pass, so it will probably be part of the Senate version of legislation. The same language doesn't appear in the House version, so they will have to be conferenced. And it's just a question because local folks, all these state lawmakers, would like to be able to set their own rules
for figure out what they're going to do
gun
about
control.
It.
Exactly. So this remains a dispute. And as that lawmaker mentioned, the National Conference of State Legislatures, the National League of Cities, are lobbying against having that provision in the legislation. So we'll have to see how it turns out in Congress.
Very interesting. Well, Bart, thank you very much for taking time out with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Bart Jansen, reporter for USA Today, covering transportation, including the Federal Aviation Administration. Dave Brooks, always good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Dave Brooks, reporter for the Concord Monitor and blogger at graniteGeek.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel, with help from Jessica Hunt. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.